And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 26th of February, 2024. How are you all keeping out there? I hope you had a lovely weekend, or if you were working, that work went well for you. And it's great to have you on board the 9 till noon show for the next 3 hours. And we've got loads, as you can imagine, to keep you informed and entertained. We're going to be across the big issues locally, covering the topics and features nationally and beyond as well. We want you involved in the conversation right from the get-go. And this includes if you want to raise an issue with us, if something happened over the weekend, or maybe something nice happened to you that you want to share that as well, please feel free to do so. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. You can email from anywhere in the world, of course, to comments@highlandradio.com. More and more of you choosing to email as well. And if you listen to the podcast of the programme, or if you listen overnight, feel free to get involved in the conversation with that email address. We can carry it on to the next day or whenever you happen to be listening. And you want to watch the show, you can do that too if it suits you, if you're working from home or whatever it might be. We're on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. Just type that in, watch live, subscribe, and hit the bell. Always good if you can do that. And we're across Facebook as well, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Right, the Derry People Donegal news this morning. A mother whose son went missing in Donegal over 3 years ago has renewed an appeal for information as she believes there is a glimmer of hope he's still alive. Anthea Langlan made the appeal during her appearance on the latest edition, The Missing, a podcast dedicated to missing people. I still have to keep hold of that hope that somebody knows that my son is out there still, she said. And we've spoken to Andrea on a number of occasions on this show, and she's a powerful, strong, brave woman and still holding out hope. But the unanswered, it must be incredibly, well, I know it is because I've spoke to her about it, the unanswered questions and not knowing, incredibly, incredibly tough. The Derry news this morning, two widows whose husbands were murdered by the UDA in separate incidents in 1976 have accepted substantial settlements in cases brought against the MOD and PSNI. Mary Lochry, widow of Jim Lochry, and Marie Newton, widow of John Toland, settled their cases for an undisclosed significant sum. The two families commenced civil proceedings following the publication of reports by the Historical Inquiries team. On to the nationals now. We'll start with the Irish Times, and immigration remains at the top of the list of issues getting the attention of voters in the past month, according to the latest Irish Times Ipsos BNA snapshot survey of public sentiment. Over a fifth, that's 22% of respondents to the survey, cited immigration issues when asked what they had noticed about what the government had done recently. This represents a decline of 2 points from last month. Next on the list was housing at 15%, again a decline of 4 points from last month. Climate change, sustainability was the next most frequently mentioned issue, cited by 7% of respondents. Now, I'm not really quite sure how this survey works and what they mean by what they thought of or commented on. Just 22%, like if you're not, say housing for an example, I mean, if you're not concerned or thinking about housing or immigration for that matter, like what are you actually thinking of? But 22% over the last month to the survey cited immigration issues when asked what they had noticed about the government. Energy prices, the cost of living and crime, previously areas of high concern amongst voters, were each mentioned by just 3% of respondents, as was employment. Again, I don't really know what how that measurement works, how to read those figures, but immigration and housing, the top two nonetheless. Speaking of immigration in the Irish Independent, demand for migrant workers to fill skill gaps has more than doubled as government officials deal with a surge in employers seeking permits to bring in staff from outside Europe. Hikes in the minimum salaries that must be offered from last month do not seem to have put employers off. Demand for work permits has intensified since the economy hit full employment, according to the department in charge of issuing permits. Nurses, healthcare assistants, Chefs, computer programmers, and doctors are among the top candidates sought. A Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment spokesperson said last month was a particularly busy period for work permit applications. There was strong demand before the rollout of new higher salary thresholds for permit holders last month. And a total of 30,981 work permits were issued to people from outside the European Economic Area last year. 387 of those were in Donegal, which is relatively high compared to some counties, but not quite as high as you can imagine as it relates to the likes of Galway, Limerick, Cork and Dublin. And there's also a feature from a worker in the healthcare sector. A Nigerian healthcare assistant has told of how lonely it can be to work on a general employment permit in Ireland. John, who's 36, who studied and earned his master's degree in Ireland, has been working on his current permit for the past 2 years while his wife cares for their daughters in Nigeria. He said he loves Ireland and even speaks Irish with his elderly patients, but that life here can be difficult due to the conditions of the permit. Ever since, I've been working so hard, just thinking that if I can do more overtime, take more shifts, then it will be enough to bring them over to Ireland. We speak every day. They tell me, Dad, I miss you. I want to hug you. It's not easy. It's a difficult situation for me, he said. His family in Nigeria, and he is here working in the health service. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and I don't really read newspapers much over the weekend, just more snapshots of stories or what have you, but it seems that the whole RTE crisis continues to dominate the papers. The government, we read in the Mail, is facing another week of chaos and infighting over an RTE crisis that appears to be escalating as the focus shifts now to Media Minister Catherine Martin and Director General Kevin Backhurst. In the wake of the controversial resignation of RTE board chair Shun Ní Raheli in the early hours of Friday morning, the Irish Daily Mail learned Mr. Backhurst is facing new pressure within government. Ms. Martin is facing a media committee and a dull grilling on Ms. Ní Raheli's resignation, as well as a meeting with the board that was rebelled or has rebelled against her. Concern is also growing over another settlement involving the departure of David Nally, who was Mr. Backhurst's number two when he headed up the Current Affairs department. And on it goes and on it goes. On to the red top tabloids now. We'll start with the Irish Daily Star. And 3 in 5 voters will vote yes in the referendum on women and carers. This is according to a new study, 3 in 5. So that's a significant majority, isn't it? Yep. 60%, is it 3 in 5? It is 60%. On March 8th, the public... Oh, sorry, the subtext to that is 3 in 5 voters will vote yes in the referendum on women and carers, but bishops claim the amendments will dilute the importance of marriage and motherhood. On March 8th, the public will be asked if the reference in the Constitution to a mother's duties in the home should be replaced with an article recognising the role of family carers. The latest Red Sea poll for the Sunday Business Post revealed 58% of those asked intend to vote yes in the carers referendum, which aims to widen the definition of the family. However, in a statement read out at masses nationwide on behalf of bishops yesterday, they said the family based on the exclusive lifelong and life-giving public commitment of marriage is the foundation cell of society and essential to the common good. But the argument from the government is that ship's already sailed. In other words, that might be what one might feel and might hope, but it's not really the makeup of families anymore. But that's where the bishops stand on that anyway. Ireland's being targeted with huge drug shipments because our poorly patrolled waters are asking to be exploited. This is in the Sun this morning. The Irish Navy, described as the eyes and ears of the North Atlantic, are down to just one vessel actively protecting a region which is 8 times our land mass. Ellie James Joyce and Ellie George Bernard Shaw are currently doing back-to-back patrols, so only one is on patrol at any time. Just 10 days ago, almost €33 million worth of crystal meth was seized at Cork Port. But, I mean, the huge expanse of water. And obviously those moving drugs feel that we're a soft target. Because what's being found or discovered or washed up on shores is obviously the tip of the drugs iceberg. And finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror, the mum of backpacker Danielle McLaughlin has spoken of her relief that the man accused of her murder was too sick to take up bail to attend his sister's wedding. And you can just imagine and sense the emotional roller coaster that this family are going through, learning that someone, now let's not forget, Danielle will never attend a wedding again. Because her life was taken from her. But you're sitting over in Ireland and over in India, they're going, right, he can go leave to go to his sister's wedding. And then, oh, he's too sick to go to his sister's wedding. It's just the range of emotions. It's so, so difficult for the family, I'm sure. Danielle, 28, from Buncrana, was found dead in a secluded spot in Goa in India. It's popular with holidaymakers, of course. The night before, Danielle had attended a holy party near Kankona Beach in the south of Goa. She'd been raped and murdered. Vikat Bhagat has been charged with her rape and murder and has pleaded not guilty. Last Thursday, Bhagat made an application to the High Court in Goa for temporary bail to go to his sister's wedding last Saturday. He was granted bail, leaving Danielle's mum, Andrea, of course, and family heartbroken. Now, the paper reveals that Bhagat did not take up the bail because he was too sick. Again, you know, it's just the ups and downs and ins and outs and the emotional pulls one way or another. 086 60 25,000. Just a quick reminder there for you of what the WhatsApp and text number is. We're back with loads more on the 9 till noon show after we take a quick break. Right, so one of the big stories locally last week was the removal of physiotherapy services from St. Joseph's Hospital. That's what was announced early in the week. We'd got contact from some concerned people, of course, made the inquiries, were able to reveal this information. The information was given at very short notice, and we were told in a press release that these services would be provided from Lifford and Donegal Town, dependent on where you are, where you are based. Then concerns was raised by local GP Dr. Dennis McCauley on this programme. He said that if physiotherapy services were not available for patients in the hospital, then he couldn't see functioning on a safe step-down option from the LUH. And the HSC had said they were trying to find another venue in the Finn Valley area to operate these services. But Dr. McCauley said that unless they're actually on site, then St. Joseph's couldn't be seen as a safe step down, not somewhere he could refer one of his patients to. Well, then, towards the end of the week, the HSE said physiotherapies are still being provided for patients at St. Joseph's Hospital, and the facility can still accept discharges from Letterkenny University Hospital. So it's all very confusing. Like, we still don't know, and we're having to, it's like being a dentist, dragging information one bit at a time out of the mouth of the HSE. The question is, where in St. Joseph's will these services happen? Is it in a ward or is it in a department? And there's no community services either, right? So what's the story with waiting lists and what have you? So there's lots and lots of questions. And this is what happens when information is dripped out and you have to try and drag it out. Because all we want is very clear information for the staff, for the patients, for the families of the patients, and what have you. Father Lorcan Sharkey is a committee member of the Save Our St. Joseph's campaign. Father Lorcan, thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning to you, Greg.
Right, have you been able to make any further sense from what the HSE has been saying over the last week? Or are you, like me, still very much confused as to what is actually happening and what the implications of it might be?
Well, it seems to be very vague, really, to be truthful with you. The statement that we heard, what their services were being taken away from St. Joseph's Hospital and being transferred to Donegal Town and then to Lifford. And then the HSE then say that the services are still going to be provided. How can that possibly be? We cannot have two situations. Obviously, the physiotherapists who are working there, and they're excellent. I had to avail of their services a few years ago myself to help with a problem that I had with a knee. And they were excellent, excellent at their work and so on. And if the premises that they were using needs to be upgraded to HICWA standards, that's fine, that should happen. But surely within the building itself, that is already there. There are many offices in the building and now that used to at one time be part of, an integral part of the St. Joseph's Community Hospital, but they were taken over by the HSE some years ago and redeveloped into offices and so on. And I see the HSE as being very vague, really, in their statements and not fair to us in that way, because we have been fighting for some years now to retain St. Joseph's Hospital as a very, very important part of our community. And at the moment, it seems to me that bit by bit, the services that are in St. Joseph's Hospital, making it an integral part of our community,
and
are
the thing
being
too,
taken away.
Yeah, and Father Sharkey, too, what confuses me is every time we make an inquiry, the HSC statement gets a little bit longer, if you know what I mean. And the latest thing they've added onto it, everything else remains the same. In order to complete these works, there was a requirement for patients to be relocated within the hospital. The most suitable area identified was the primary care physiotherapy department, known as the Drogheda Ward. So this ensures existing patients in the hospital are catered for and will not be disturbed by the works. In addition, it ensures that bed numbers can be retained. But then it does talk of moving primary care physiotherapy services to Donegal Town and Lifford. And then it says further down, this is the bit that's been added on, physiotherapy services will continue to be provided by the hospital. Now, there are two issues here. We know Lifford and Donegal Town are already wedged in terms of being able to take any additional capacity, but it still remains a little bit confusing. And even, and this is a fact, we spoke to a couple of GPs, Father, they actually still don't really fully know what the situation is as it pertains to St. Joseph's being a step-down facility for their patients. They still haven't actually received that information from the HSE. So we're kind of, you know, trying to work this out on crumbs of information.
Yes. And we're, as a committee, we're in the same situation. We had a meeting on Saturday morning in the Parish Centre in Stranorlar about it, and we were informed of that our Minister, Charlie McConnell-Oak, wishes to set up a meeting between our committee and members of the HSE who are in control of the services in our northwest area. And we're waiting for confirmation then from that, when that meeting is going to be. And when we have confirmation about that, we're going to get together as a committee again and decide what specific questions we have to ask the HSE, because we are very confused. I mean, at the moment, the hospital functions as a respite place where quite a number of people are staying there, some of them from my own parish, and I'm in Glenfinn. And in fact, only just 1 week ago, a week ago tonight, I visited a person from my my parish there. And then it acts also as a step down from people who are have been in Letterkenny Hospital and are not ready yet to go home. It's an excellent facility for them as well. But gradually, the number of beds available in St. Joseph's Hospital are being reduced, and other services are taken away as well. For instance, the dentistry, which used to be an integral part of it as well as was available, was taken away. And then the day hospital was taken away as well, which served the elderly people who would come in for a few hours, a couple of days a week. That was taken away. So bit by bit, the HSE are reducing St. Joseph's Hospital. And it seems to me that it's very unfair to the whole area of the Finn Valley that that has been done, and they're doing it stealthily, really.
Yes, well, that's what we're trying to avoid happening, isn't it, by speaking about it publicly. Father Lorcan Sharkey, thank you very much for, thank you very much for your time. Committee member of the Save Our St. Joseph's Hospital. John Gallagher is chair of the Save the St. Joseph's Hospital campaign. John, thank you for your time as well this morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg.
John, what it appears to me, and then I'm really interested in you expanding on your views, I think whoever was charged with delivering this information to begin with actually hadn't got the right information. Or what's happening is the HSC now are seeing that there's a big backlash on this and struggling to try and come up with something that's palatable to the likes of your committee and other. Either way, though, this has been handled disastrously, I would say, because we're all confused. Some of us are concerned. Others might feel reassured. But when we've got top GPs who still don't know what's going on and their patients are the ones here that we're talking about, it's a serious concern, John.
Well, it was seen as a decision that was done in a hurry, and I was saying, quite frankly, that the second point that you made there, that it's because of the backlash now, they're trying to put a bit more polish on it. But this, I suppose, goes back, you know, what the committee would be afraid of. This goes back to January 2016, when at the time the minister was charged of elderly people was Kathleen Lynch, and she issued a statement at the Dáil that time that there was a new hospital going to be built in Letterkenny, that St. Joseph's Hospital, Lifford Hospital and Remelton Hospital would be closing as a result of that. And it seems that that actual statement has never been altered or retracted. And what we have seen in St. Joseph's is really death by a thousand cuts, sort of sense. And even though at all the time the HSE say they're committed to maintaining St. Joseph, but the question is, what is their vision for the facility? We in the Thun Valley see it as an important facility for the care of elderly people in the Thun Valley. Now, at the moment, most people will tell you that an elderly person in the Thun Valley, it's nearly impossible for them to get into St. Joseph's. At the moment, even it is difficult to get in for respite mm-hmm. into St. Joseph's. So it's been used entirely as a step down for Letterkenny Hospital. And I don't think that is not our view how the hospital facilities should be used. I think it should be just a very important part of community care. I think elderly people should be looked after in their own community, among their own peers, and they'll be much better off that way. And from time to time, the HSE issue these statements and say they're committed, but that's very fine to a point. But there's a very huge variance between what the state and what they do in practice. And as Father Larkin had actually said there, you know, we have these cuts. We have the dental service. We cut the day care centre being done away with, and now the physiotherapy done away with. And, you know, it's very difficult to believe that this had to happen so quickly. I know somebody who was in there this day week for physio, and they were given an appointment for the 5th of March again. Mm-hmm. Now, as it turned out, that evening the news came out that the place was closed. The staff didn't seem to know. Now, they blame HICWA for the thing, and that there's a room in St. Joseph's that actually needed attention. But the last HICWA report that's on record is actually filed last October. And that HICWA report actually says that St. Joseph's, and I quote, was substantially compliant. Now, if it was substantially compliant, I don't think there was anything that was a huge emergency arose in the meantime that would require just the physiotherapist section to be closed down and people moved out in a hurry. I think it should have been planned. I think there was time there to look for a different facility. The first question you'd have to ask, was it actually necessary at all to move the physio? Was there, as Father Larkin says, there may have been office space there that could be much easier to use? Then was there another place in the Thun Valley on a temporary basis that could be used for this purpose? You know, there are numerous buildings in the Balbaface and Orler area which would be open, which could possibly be used for physio for a short time. So it was very difficult to believe that this huge emergency came, the staff didn't know about, and within 4 days that they were basically gone. And we need to find out exactly what the plans are for St. Joseph's building itself, what is the plans for physiotherapy services in the Twin Town area, and is there a plan to restore day services for the elderly in the at St. Joseph's. You know, the whole thing seems to be crazy. We're starting to now to think we have a government who tells us that we should be doing less driving. In fact, they're going to spend $9 billion on a new rail system in Dublin to try to get people out of cars. Well, up here in Donegal, they're making decisions that require staff and hundreds of patients to increase their journeys by over 30 miles to get treatment. They're bringing basically the mountain to Muhammad rather than the other way about. You know, and we just need to have a meeting with the management of the HSE to see what their plans are.
Yeah, and I think it needs to be an upfront one because the as I said to Father Lorcan, the statements are changing every single time we ask them further questions. They're saying that because of a HICWA inspection, essential fire upgrades worked were identified that needed to be completed within a specified time frame. So, like, is it a meeting? Did HICWA say you need to close this down straight away, or did they have a date in towards the end of February and just didn't bother telling anyone, and someone said, oh my word, we need to work on this HICWA stuff? Do you know what I mean? Like, even in that one statement, there needs some clarity here. What's the urgency of this time frame now all of a sudden?
Well, this is the point. You know, the last HICWA report is actually on file, was filed last October. And as I said, it said that St. Joseph's was substantially compliant. Now, if they knew that a room had to be done up, or say last October, then that was the time to start planning where was this physio going to, therapy was going to be delivered, was there another place in the building? It seemed to be a drastic step just to close down a place where hundreds of people are getting treatment and tell them to move off for either to Lifford or to Donegal Town. Either journey is going to be a round journey of over 30 miles. Like it defies logic what they actually have done.
Yeah.
Maybe it had to be done by end of February, but October was the time to plan. October was the time to let out the news that had to be done, and we should have been a time a limit put on it as well, that it'd be closed for a certain length of time, and that this work would take X number of weeks.
In that report you quote, John, the dates, it's not like I have August. I'm not sure if there was a subsequent one in October, but anyway, the August one's on the HICWA site. But they do talk of fire. And they say, although the provider had measures in place to protect residents from the risk of fire, the inspection found deficits in fire safety equipment, oversight procedures, and the emergency evacuation drill records. The provider representative committed to addressing these findings without delay. The inspector's findings are discussed under Regulation 28 Fire Precautions. I don't really see anything. That talks to the need to do the type of work that they're talking about now. As I say, maybe I'm missing something.
Well, even I don't know. The report that I'm talking about didn't mention that either. But if it did occur, if work has to be done, then it has to be done, mm-hmm. and we understand that. But it should be notified well in advance to staff, well in advance to people who are attending physiotherapy there, and we should be looking at an alternative building long ago. For it, rather than sending people off 30 miles.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of these people.
Well, also,
remember,
by the way, just to be very clear about that 30 miles, John, we spoke to Dr. Dennis McCauley last week, who says this throws this whole area into disarray because there isn't the capacity in Donegal Town or Lifford to deal with that workload. So, it's not just about the travel. It's about if you can actually get the services in a timely fashion.
Yeah, and the other thing is the state is going to continue in the hospital. Now, my understanding, I'm no medic, but my understanding is that if you have physio treatment in the building itself, that you have to have at least three people there, that in many cases, there are people who are not able to stand up, do different things, mm-hmm. so you need maybe the physio and two assistants to be with them.
Well, we don't even know what's not clear from the HSE is whether they're saying these services will be provided in the hospital. Is it in a particular ward, on the ward? Is it in a department? You know, like, again, we're going to have to go back and we're going to probably get another statement, but no one's available to answer some very, very basic questions, John, and I think an awful lot of this could be cleared up with an interview, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think, really, if they made one just clear statement and tell us exactly what was actually happening. Mm-hmm. But what is happening is really we're getting drips of information out. We're getting drips as to, first of all, it just there was no information at all. It's just closing, full stop. Then all of a sudden it was closing on a temporary basis. And the statement that they issued didn't actually say that it was the service was coming back to St. Joseph. They said that the service would be coming back to the Finn Valley or the Twin Town areas. So it didn't actually say that it was coming back to where it had been, in which case I don't understand why that would be the case, because if the ward is fixed that needs the attention, you'd imagine the patients would be taken out of the room the physio was in and that the physios would return there. But that statement didn't actually make that clear.
No.
So we just want to find out and see what the situation is.
Just to reference that, the HSE wishes to confirm that as part of its overall service delivery plan and in the best interest of service users in the longer term, primary care services, including physiotherapy services, will be provided from Finn Valley area in accordance with patients' needs. It doesn't state that they will be returned to the hospital. It is quite ambiguous and perhaps purposely so. They're trying to find somewhere in the Finn Valley. Is it the hospital? They would have said, we hope to have these services returned to St. Joseph's Hospital as soon as the works is complete or are complete. That's not in the statement. And if they're not in the hospital, it does make discharging to that hospital complicated, John, because I think they're purposely trying to confuse us. But anyway, John, we're going to seek more answers, and we appreciate your time, Father Lorcan's time. And as I say, we're going to try and get to the bottom of this, as is your campaign group as well. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Take care, John. Bye-bye. Now, we're joined on the programme by Fiona McCausland, Director of the Family Mediation Services. Good morning, Fiona. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning. You are most welcome.
Right. The Legal Aid Board's Family Mediation Service has launched a new callback service aimed at making free mediation more accessible to families. Mediation, talking things through, especially with a third party present, it's always the best way, isn't it? And I'll tell you, Fiona, we have a legal section on the show, you know, where we have a local solicitor that comes on and answers legal questions. A lot of them are relating to family issues. And the first advice always is, look, if you can talk about it, that's best for everyone, especially if there's children involved and what have you. So talk to us about this new service and what you see its importance as.
Okay. Well, first of all, the Family Mediation Service at the Legal Aid Board there has an office in Letterkenny. So the good news is that there's a local service there that people can access, and it's on the third floor in Lynn House in Letterkenny. And the idea of this callback facility is really to make us more accessible to the public, because, as you say, mediation is the room to be in to negotiate and sort out your future plans. And we just want to make sure that people can find us. So if you go to www.legalaidboard.ie, you can put in your contact details there any 24 hours, 7 days a week, and we will give you a phone back during office hours. You can also phone our local office in Letterkenny during office hours. But the idea of the callback is to just open the doors a little bit wider for everybody.
And how does mediation work, or what's the setup, or is it in a room, is it on Zoom, or what's the story?
So it is room-based. So maybe if I just say that for the first piece is that when you get in touch with us, you will have a one-to-one with the mediator. So you're not suddenly finding yourself coming into the room with the other person straight away. So you get meeting your mediator, and that is room-based. We do facilitate through online mediation and phone-based mediation. I mean, that started during the COVID years, and we've kept that as part of how we work because, as I say, it's all about accessibility. But really, the room is the place to be. You meet with your mediator, the other person meets with the mediator, and then you both come in, you sit down, you sign your agreement to mediate. And after that, it's however many sessions, always free, that you need to work with the mediator. And we've quite a structured process. So, you know, we know this terrain well, and we know how to set up the negotiations, keep you safe, mm-hmm. keep you productive, and most importantly, move you from maybe a time when it feels, God, this is just impossible, how do we sort this out, to, you know, we've done it, we've done the right thing for our family, and we've a future.
this is all well and good if you've got two parties that are prepared to sort of engage.
Yeah.
Right. So do you have any role? So say I came to you and I says, look, I've broke up with my partner. I would like this to be as amicable as is possible.
Yeah.
But how do I get that if they're a little bit reticent or there's no contact or whatever? So how do you get the parties into the room?
Okay, so that's really the skill of the mediator and also the trust. That's why you meet with the mediator one-on-one first. And if you think of any type of dispute or conflict or disagreement, we always start in a place where we don't want to have to talk to the other person. Mm. Otherwise, we'd sort it out ourselves, you know. So the first thing you do is you meet with the mediator and Emer there in Letterkenny, you know, she's very, very experienced. You build your trust with her. And then the other person does the same. So you're really working with the mediator first, even though all three of you may be in the same room. And the expertise there of Emer is to listen and hear what is it that's really at the heart of this. Because, you know, at the end of the day, everything can be worked out. It's a question of how do we get from there to there? And it's a conflict resolution process. So we are the people to talk to if you are finding it difficult. And all that we're doing is putting out a hand and saying, we can help you, trust us, we're experienced, and let us hear what matters to you. And then we help you build the path forward.
And is it often, or what is the pattern? Is it sort of like quite soon after a breakup? Is it maybe after people have been through the courts process or ahead of that? Or where does the mediation work best, or where do we see it most?
Yeah, well, so first of all, people come to us at any stage. And in terms of where we see people coming to our service most, it really is that broad spectrum. It's, I suppose, you get to a moment where you're thinking, do you know what, we really do need to sit down and work this out with somebody who can help us. Where does it work best? We would suggest that come early, come, you know, as you say, I'm signed and separate, this is difficult, pick up the phone. We work with solicitors in the sense that most divorces in particular require legal advice. That's absolutely fine. Financial advice, that's absolutely fine. We're in the negotiators. We're in the seat to help you negotiate. And what we want is for people to come into the sessions with as much good quality information and advice as possible. So we often will send the people we're working with out to solicitors and to financial experts and so on. And then they come back. And, you know, if it makes the agreement last better and work better, that's good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. What's the stickiest wicket in mediation?
Well, so I would say in my own experience in mediation, there are two pieces. One, the children are always central. And funnily enough, in a way, they're not the stickiest wicket because parents are parents. And there's lots of different ways we help parents stay parents, regardless of the separation. The stickiest wicket is often the family home.
Right.
It's the biggest thing in terms of the decision. And also, are you keeping it? Are you selling it? Are you moving out? There's a little bit of an element of a binary quality about it. And not, do you know one of the things I really learned first when I was working in family mediation was there's a pot of money and there's a home and it's going to have to work somehow or other. So, you know, Mary and Johnny fighting over the family home doesn't make another house appear.
Mm-hmm.
And at the heart of that, it's very, very hard for somebody to move out a home they've been in for 20 years. So there's a kind of combination there and that can be very sticky.
Because fundamentally, there isn't. This is the real. There's an emotional element to it. There's an emotional attachment. There's some people that think, well, if I can kind of stick with some ownership of the home, maybe we can get back together or whatever. Yeah. You know, we're so bum and complex, aren't we, as humans?
Yeah. I know, absolutely. And I mean, how many of us think of our home in terms of finance? We don't. Our home place that we've built together. You know, you've put the shelves up. You've done the gap, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something that is particularly hard if you are the one that wants to stay in the marriage and you find you're the one that's having to leave the home, that's unbearable. Yeah. You know, that is so hard. Yeah. And I think if I was to say a core piece of what we do is show compassion. Mm-hmm. We show compassion for people in these situations, but we still ask them to step up to make the difficult decisions. Yeah. So the wicket is sticky. And it's got to be worked out.
Yeah, and the statistics show, unfortunately, there is an increase in divorce, in relationship breakup, or we're getting better at sort of identifying, and I'm not really quite sure if we're all just splitting up more or if we're just collating the information just better. What's your take on that?
Well, I think it's a really interesting point you're making there, in that I think we are collating better. I think that for sure that's there. But I also think that, as a society, we are more supportive of allowing families to separate if they're miserable in the one house. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, I've never believed that this generation or the next generation are unhappier at marriage. I think what's happened is that we've moved to a place in society where, look, if this is really not working, I mean, kids are in the middle of whatever, in the middle of a house, then look at this and make a decision.
I think the only thing is that unmeasurable is the thing that might change over time is if we are a bit more transient and, you know, maybe we don't try as hard to make things work, you know, like I think any of us with older generation parents, we can remember them, you know, arguing like cats and dogs and you think that's it, but they find a way, you know, whereas I think maybe nowadays people say, right, I'm on to option B or something. But anyway, it's always good. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Fiona.
No, I'm just going to say that's something that's often said. And you know what? I've been working in this field for, 24, 25 years. I've never been in a room with a couple that got there easily.
No,
if we still fall in love, we still want it to work, and we're still brokenhearted when it doesn't work. And I think that is at the heart of it. And I get it. I understand why, you know, my own parents, you know, might say the same. But we still want marriage to work. I see that. Yeah, and heartbreaking when it doesn't.
OK, listen, a amicable, through a very tough time, an amicable breakup's always better for both parties, especially if there's children there as well. The Legal Aid Board's Family Mediation Services, they're available to you, and they've launched a new callback service aimed at making free mediation more accessible to families. And just remind us once again, if you don't mind, Fiona, how people can sign up or register or whatever the phraseology might be.
So they can go on to www.legalaidboard.ie. and put in their details, and the Family Mediation Service at the Legal Aid Board will phone you back. And we have an office there in Letterkenny for anybody who wants to call in there as well.
Thank you very much. It's been a really interesting conversation. Take care of yourself, Fiona. That's Fiona McCausland there.